Prenatal vitamins should be started ideally before you become pregnant. But if you are just finding out that you are expecting, haven't started one yet, or are just learning your prenatal vitamins are not providing the nutrients you thought they were, it's not too late to start or switch. Needed's prenatal vitamins are packed with the vitamins, minerals, and botanicals needed for complete, comprehensive nourishment for both you and your current or future baby. Needed is amazing and are offering our listeners 20% off with code VBAC20. So you can get your prenatal vitamin and so much more at thisisneeded.com. And don't forget to type in code VBAC20 for 20% off.
Hello, hello. It's almost the end of November. It is crazy to think that the year is coming to an end. But guess what, you guys? We still have so many amazing stories coming your way. And today's story is from our friend Elma. See, I already am messing it up. It looks like Alma, guys, but she says, you say it. Tell us how to say it correctly, because you say it so beautifully.
Alma.
Elma.
Yes, but anyway you say it is fine.
Perfect. I want to say it correctly, though. So yeah, so she is sharing her stories today, and she, now, you are in New Jersey now, but you weren't in New Jersey when you had your VBAC. Is that correct?
When I had the VBAC, but when I had the C-section, I was in New Jersey. So we just kind of zigzagged a little bit.
Yes, yes. So she's in New Jersey, but the VBAC wasn't in New Jersey. I know a lot of people, when they're listening, they're like, hey, where was this VBAC? So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into the story. But let's give them a little teaser of what your episode is going to be. What your first C-section kind of, I feel like your first C-section was like the steps, right? The steps of, or the cascade. But, and then a little bit of what you went through. So tell us just a little bit of a teaser before we get into the episode.
So I had a lot of interventions in my first pregnancy, ended in an emergency C-section. And then for my son, my second pregnancy, it was exactly the opposite. Like, there was no time for any intervention. He just flew out. My whole labor was 2 hours from the first contraction to when he was born. Almost delivered in the car. Like, he was too fast. But it was exactly the experience that I wanted to have. So,
yes. Oh my gosh. So precipitous labor after a lot of interventions, induction, all these things. So excited to get to this episode today, but we do have a review of the week. And as usual, if you haven't done so yet, please leave us a review. We absolutely love them. Okay. This episode reviewer is Desiree Jacobson. And she actually just left them this review this year in August of 2024 and says, thank you. Says, this podcast and parents course is amazing, and I'm not a VBAC mom, but I have been listening since 2020. I binge listen near the end of every pregnancy to remind me of everything I need to remember in the birth process through my previous births. This time around, I felt more prepared than ever before, having plans in place just in case. We were able to have a quick birth for my fifth baby. I love the education, passion, love, and support this podcast gives. I recommend it to everyone I know, and I have learned so much from it. I am so grateful for this podcast. Thank you. Oh, love that. Love that. Love that. Love that. And that was actually sent to us via email. So if you didn't know, you can email your reviews at info@thevbacklink.com. But your reviews on the podcast and on Google are what truly help other women of strength find this platform and find the courage and the information that they need to choose the birth that they desire.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, girl, let's get into this story. So, first birth, lots of interventions. Let's talk about it. One, what type of interventions? And two, why? And kind of what led up to needing those interventions or needing quotation? I don't know if it's quotation needing or really medically needed. Tell us more.
Yeah, my first pregnancy was very normal and healthy up until I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes. And that's where, things started to change a little bit. I just failed the test by just a point. So my blood sugar was elevated, but it wasn't as bad as it could be. So I wasn't even on
Barely.
insulin. I was just on diet control and everything was going fine, so I thought. But then I would say a week before my due date, I was told that I needed to be induced because of the gestational diabetes. And that was the first, I guess, like red flag of things just going out of my control because I didn't expect to be induced. And although I had gestational diabetes for a while already, I wasn't told that this would probably be the case, that I would be induced. So I agreed to the induction, of course, and I understand why it's done. So I went along with it, but I think my daughter just did not want to be born because we, on that day at least, we went in for the 40, on my 40th week, and I was on Pitocin for hours and it did nothing. And then I tried, some exercises. I tried a bunch of things, nothing worked. Eventually, the doctor suggested to manually break my water. And that's where I wish I had asked maybe to do other things first. And I wish I had rejected that choice, but I went
I
along
know.
with it, and from that point, the labor went from 0 to 1,000. Like I was in so much pain in a matter of minutes. Everything happened so fast, and I wasn't ready for that, I think. And I asked for an epidural really fast. I got the epidural, and that's also when things got worse because my blood pressure started to decrease.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that that could happen, actually. Later on, I scoured through every detail of what happened and I tried to figure out what exactly went wrong. And I realized that that could happen with an epidural. And when your blood pressure is affected, of course, the baby's blood pressure is affected. And so my daughter started to have some fetal distress, it's called.
Decelerations.
Yeah, all of that. And it was very concerning. So I tried, they put me on my back to deliver, to just kind of push her out. I wasn't even at 10 centimeters yet, but they were going to stretch me. But her blood pressure just declined in a way that was really concerning. So I was rushed to the OR and the C-section was done. Everything happened so fast. I hesitated in using the word traumatic just because in the end, everybody was fine. I was fine. My daughter was fine. She's healthy. But it was very traumatic because nothing was in my control in that moment. And I felt like I felt almost robbed of the experience that I expected to have. So
Well,
that
and
was my first birth.
when things are rushed like that too, and you're left in a sense of, I mean, you said panic, but like in a sense of like urgent need to save something, right? Or save someone. It puts this triggered like, I don't know, I feel like it just sends all your alarms inside off, right?
Yeah, that's
And
exactly what
it's
happened. Yeah.
like, so it's not even that you're like, because everyone has trauma differently and they view trauma differently. Like someone may see one thing as traumatic and someone be like, how is that traumatic? But then someone else, you know. And so it's okay, I think, that you're using that word because that is how you're perceiving this and your feelings and your alarms that were going off in your body. As everything it was like being rushed and all these things left that traumatic feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I at in that moment, like I felt like I couldn't breathe. My At this time too, there was a lot of COVID restrictions, so my husband wasn't let into the OR. So he was like, "What happened to her?" Like, he was more concerned than me probably. He thought both of us were gonna die. My daughter and myself. Because it just all happened so quickly. But thankfully, we were okay in the end. But I had no idea I'd be coming back with a C-section scar. With it now, that's requires more recovery. As a new parent, we were already new to everything. So it was a lot to deal with, I think.
And I'm kind of what you were saying. I'm sure your husband has a lot of trauma or had a lot of trauma through that experience too. We know that COVID, especially, I mean, birth in general comes with a lot of things, especially the unexpected. But then when you throw COVID in between, like in with that,
Of course.
it's a lot of ick. It's a lot of
Yeah,
icky
a
feelings,
lot, yes.
a lot of ick. So everything was good. Baby was good. You were good. Overall, it was a less desired situation. But where did that leave you after you had the baby and you were starting to recover? Where was your mind?
I think I had to process a lot of what happened, and I think I went into the first pregnancy very naive, I guess, like not, it's important to be educated, and I really appreciate this podcast for that reason, to encourage us to be educated. It's not that we're not doctors, you know, at least many of us are not medical professionals, but we need to be aware of our bodies and just what the process looks like, and even some terminology. And I was totally clueless on everything, and I think that what I tried to do in the in between for both pregnancies was just learn, you know, what's going on in my body, what can I say no to in terms of interventions. You know, you don't have to agree to everything, and I never want to argue with a doctor, of course, but just if I really feel like that's not the best choice, I can always ask for another choice. I can consider other options. And I just didn't know I could do that the first time. So I definitely tried to educate myself as much as possible. And I think that contributed a lot to how the second pregnancy went on, the second delivery.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you so much for pointing that out and saying that because well, if I were to guess, we all didn't probably know that. Right? And like we may have heard, like, you can always say no, but I don't know if we realized how much we really could say no or ask for another opinion, or maybe we knew it but didn't feel we could, like, really feel we could. And it can be hard. It can be hard to say no, but I love it. You're like, I want a different option. I'm going to say no to this right now. Give me another option, right? It's always okay.
Definitely. Even, you know, considering other options, even maybe wanting to wait, you know, if the time allows, you know, can we try this later? Can we, you know, it's there's a the conversation needs to happen. You know, it doesn't have to be just one thing that's suggested, you know. So
This way or no.
for sure.
So, where did your education start stemming from? Where did you start when you're like, okay, I want to do something different next time?
The podcast feedback link.
Awesome.
I listened to a bunch of podcasts. There's All Things Pregnancy with Dr. Nicole Rankins, and of course the
We've
feedback
had
link.
her on.
And
We love her.
yeah, I just I that's just what I did all the time. Like before going to bed, I listened to an episode. Driving, I listened to an episode. It was very, very helpful. I felt like I could digest information better that way as opposed to reading. So that was a very helpful tool. Listening, and I also try to find professionals around me who can speak to my specific situations. Like I had a doula, and of course I had my providers as well, and they were also helpful with helping me navigate some of the things that might have went wrong the first time and how I could prevent them going forward.
When they talked about some of the things that maybe went wrong the first time, or maybe I don't even want to say wrong, like south, they went south, even though I don't know why people say that. I love south. I love the south. So, but yeah, what were the kind of things that that stood out to them?
Well, I think the first thing was the induction in the first place. Like I completely understand the risks with gestational diabetes, but I think there could have been more conversation with that in my specific case, seeing as I did not have diabetes that was really out of control. It was very well controlled with my diet, and there could have been room to say maybe we can go a couple days past my due date. You know, I wouldn't recommend that for everyone. I think it depends on your case, but I could have tried to have that dialogue, and maybe we didn't need to have an induction. Or I also could have considered maybe different methods of induction. And I think that was the first thing, because I felt like that was like the first like domino piece, that if I didn't have the induction, it might not have led to a C-section in the first place. Another point was also the breaking of the water. Also,
Yes.
those things, I could have just said, let's wait. I was already there for the induction, so I could have just asked for a little more time. But the big point for me too was the epidural, because that was, I think, the immediate reason for the
The
fetal distress
response.
and the
Yeah.
response. Yes. So understanding how I could avoid that, I was told that if you now with the second epidural, I may not have the same reaction since I've had it before. Also, if you get flushed with some
Hi.
fluids.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you hydrate and not even
Yeah.
just intravenously, like literally drinking water before, if you even know that you're gonna want to get an epidural or it's heading that direction, start hydrating. The more you can hydrate, the better.
So I learned those things, and then also I tried to prepare myself for not even having an epidural, although that wasn't my goal, because I experienced the pains before. Even though I had the C-section, I went through some labor
Yeah.
pains, and I was accepting the fact that I might just need the epidural. But I considered that as well. Just how can I overcome this pain without any kind of medication?
Yeah.
So those areas were things that I was trying to consider what how we can do it differently so that it doesn't result in the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, love those tips. So now you're pregnant and we have baby number two. Tell us this journey.
Yeah, so I guess from the time of conception, it was about 18 months apart from the C-section. So my pregnancy went perfectly fine, no issues. Just the difference being I had a toddler, so I was more active, of course, on my feet. I took at least 10,000 steps a day. I, didn't sit much just because of my daughter, but I think that definitely helped in preparing my body. So I was really focused on how I can, work on my pelvic floor and just preparing my body for what it would take to push a baby out. I also did a lot of exercises that I found online. I never did like a class or anything, but these were just like Instagram videos where you could see like top three videos for strengthening your pelvic floor, like things like that that were just free and available. And I had a exercise ball that was a lifesaver. I highly recommend that exercise ball for anybody who's pregnant, especially in the third trimester. You can sit on it, you can lean on it, you can squeeze it between your knees. All those things, they provide relief, but they also strengthen your muscles down there. I did the mouse circuit. Just all those things were super helpful, and I did it daily to just prepare my body. But I guess going into the actual labor, I'll start by saying, first of all, I didn't have very supportive providers, which I learned from this podcast that that's very important. And I do 100% agree that that's half the battle. If you have someone who is on your side and wants to help you make like intelligent decisions,
Yes.
I would say my providers were not like completely unsupportive, but there were a lot of policies, I guess, from the hospital side that I think restricted them from just encouraging of you back. There was a lot of
Yeah.
ifs, ands, and buts. I had to, there were just so many stipulations for when I could have or if I could have a V back.
Yeah.
So
But can I
I,
ask which
sorry.
ones kind of stood out where you're like, these for sure are alarms?
Well, I would have the biggest one was that I would have to deliver before 40 weeks. And I felt like statistically, like that doesn't happen. People usually give birth
Yeah.
after their due date. So I felt like I was already set up for this is not going to happen, probably.
Yeah.
So I felt really discouraged by that. Also, I guess the due date was a big thing, but also if I were to have gestational diabetes again, then the whole conversation on the doctor side was just completely mute. Like I would just need to
Oh.
go for the induction if I had gestational diabetes. So,
Oh.
and statistically you do have it with each subsequent pregnancy, according from what I've known. So I was also expecting like, okay, so I'm most likely going to have gestational diabetes, most likely not going to give birth before 40 weeks. Then it just seems like I'm going to have to agree to a C-section. So those things were not encouraging, but I did feel like the doctors were trying to help me find some safe loopholes. One of them being they had to, I don't know if this is like by law, but like they had to schedule me for the C-section, even though I didn't want one. And so, but they explained to me that I can't go in and just say that I don't want a C-section. I can just ask for more time, or I can ask to be induced, and hopefully the induction would not lead to a C-section, though it could. So, I guess they were trying to explain to me like there are some routes you could take, but given the fact that you had a previous C-section, we do have to just assume that you're going to have another one. So I felt really kind of alone on that journey of trying to do something that I felt like I could do, especially given that the reason for the first C-section was an emergency and I was dilated. It wasn't like a failure to progress. I felt like my body was perfectly primed to do it, but because of time, we had to go for the C-section. So yeah, and I also had to have some conversations with myself, just accepting that if I do need to have another C-section, it's not the end of the world. I guess what frustrated me about the first time was that I felt like I didn't need to have it. And if it's, C-sections save lives, they're great tools when they're needed, but I felt like I didn't, aside from the fetal, the distress and all of that, I felt like I didn't need it. So I wanted to really try for this vaginal birth. So I was just kind of in between, like trying to accept what might happen, but still trying to hold on to what I believe I could do.
We love our partners over at Needed, and I want to take a little break from the show today and talk about their prenatal vitamins. Did you know that a large majority of the prenatal vitamins out in the internet land, in grocery store or health food stores, are not cutting it when it comes to providing the optimal amounts of nutrients? Studies have shown that 95% of pregnant women are left nutritionally depleted. Crazy, right? Our family here at the VBAC Link wants to help bring awareness to get better nutrients before, during, and after your pregnancy. That is why we highly suggest and love what Needed has to offer. Their prenatal vitamins not only have quality vitamins and minerals, but also the optimal amount, which is one of the biggest things that sets them apart from other brands. Their prenatals include ingredients like vitamin B12. Needed provides 200 mcg, whereas most brands have a dose that is very low. They also have 400 milligrams of choline, 4,000 IUs of vitamin D3, and 900 mcg of methylfoliated form of folate, and minerals bound to glycine for best absorption and digestive comfort. Our cute pregnant team members are loving their prenatal vitamins, and you will too. Check them out at thisisneeded.com to get 20% off with code VBAC20 at checkout. Again, that is VBAC20 at checkout. thisisneeded.com.
Yeah, so I guess fast forward to like the my 37th week. I had an appointment and I had to sign off that I would come in for a C-section, but I could I, my plan was to go in that day. And this was on the 39th week. I would have the C-section. I could go in and just say that I didn't want to have it. So on the day of the night of my 38th week, my husband just finished putting together the crib and it's midnight. He put together the crib, we went to sleep, and at around like 2:45, I wake up because I thought I peed on myself, but now I realize it, I think it was my water leaking. So I get up and I at that point I have no pain, maybe like cramping, but it wasn't really painful. But just make a long story short, 10 minutes later, I'm having full-on contractions. They were super painful. And I get out my phone to time it, and within two taps, the app is telling me go to the hospital now. Two taps. Everything happened so fast. I
Because they're
contacted my
just
doula.
coming too close. They're just are
Yeah.
so close.
Yes, they were so close. It was, I don't remember how to count them, but all I did was tap and it was telling me go. And this was at 38 weeks, so I honestly I didn't have anything ready. I didn't have my bags ready, nothing. But within a matter of minutes, I'm just on the floor, like trying to remember the hypnobirthing, trying to remember everything, but it was all slipping because it just happened so fast. We get in the car and I'm still in a whole lot of pain. At a certain point though, I do get a grip and I was doing this Christian hypnobirthing, which really helped me, and I finally just kind of grasped myself and was able to calm down, but the pain accelerated very, very fast. At a certain point, though, I start to feel a lot of pressure and was still driving, by the way. We had about a 45-minute journey to the hospital, and I start to feel like a pressure to push, and I just couldn't resist it. So I pushed and I just hammered down really hard, and it sounded like a fire hydrant was cracked open. My water busted open, and in the car. So I'm sitting like kind of behind the driver's seat on my knees, and my water just gushed open. And at that point, I really feel like he's coming out, and I couldn't like hold back the desire to push, because it also relieved the pain a little bit. It was more like a pressure as opposed to a pain. So I just kind of gave into that feeling, but I did feel like he was just between my knees and was about to come out. My husband made a few wrong turns, but eventually we got to the hospital, and I couldn't even sit, actually. I was like, they put me on a wheelchair to wheel me to the emerg the I guess like the place where you would give birth, and I couldn't sit down. He was just about to come out, and when I get there, I was already beyond 10 centimeters at that point. And when later the doctor told me, when she came down to see me, she could already see the hair of my son's head. He was already so close. And remember the talk about the epidural. I wanted the epidural. I was asking the security guard, the person at the front desk, everybody I saw, I was asking for an epidural. But I noticed that they didn't respond to me on that, and I overheard them telling my husband that it's way too late for an epidural, and my son was already halfway out. They couldn't give me an epidural. So yeah, once the doctor came, she told me to give a good push. I pushed one time, his head came out. The second time I pushed, he flew out. I had like five nurses dive in to grab him.
Oh my gosh.
And he was born, and that was the whole thing. It was super duper fast, unmedicated, and yeah. And the most touching part to me was that he came out, and they put him on my chest, and that was all I wanted. You know, when my daughter was born through the C-section, I had to beg them to let me see her, and I didn't see her until minutes later. I didn't hold her until the next day, but this time they put him right on my chest, and it was just so redemptive. You know, it was everything that I really wanted to experience.
Absolutely. Probably like a lot all at the same time. Very shocking. But then to have
Yes.
that baby be placed on your chest, oh, what an amazing moment for you.
Yes, it was.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
Super
even after it.
fast. I
Sorry.
was just saying, that was just super fast.
It was so fast, and I think this is a thing maybe with my kids. Like for my daughter too, when they broke my water, everything went very fast, you know. So I don't know, they're just really urgent. But my son was definitely in a rush. He came very, very fast. So
Did your doula even make it?
no, she didn't. She did not. I mean, she couldn't. Like it just happened too fast. And she didn't make it on time, but she was happy to hear everything went fine.
Yes, of course. Of course. Oh my goodness. So after you had the baby and you had him on your chest and everything, did all of the rest of everything go okay and smooth?
Yeah, so I was bleeding a lot, and that was a concern, but I thankfully recovered fine from that, and I had a second degree tear, which I hear is not terrible for the first time doing that. And so yeah, I recovered pretty quickly afterwards. In my experience, it really didn't compare at all to the C-section recovery. I was in a lot of pain after my C-section, but this time it was just maybe a week or two of taking some pain medication for the stitches and stuff, but overall I was fine. Yeah, and I
Awesome.
was able to go home the next day, actually. So that was
The
also very,
next
very good.
day.
Yeah.
That is awesome. How did your team, like the medical team, feel about it? Did they say anything? Did they have any
Yeah,
words?
everyone was just so shocked at how quickly everything took place. I think that was the main theme, was just the speed, and also how determined my son was. He was very with just two pushes, he just came out really fast. And the concern of obviously they were concerned of dropping him, because they all dived in to get him. So I think that was the talk of the it, this happened in the morning. So the whole rest of the day, I feel they were just chatting about that, like how
Yeah.
quickly everything happened.
Oh my goodness. I bet. I think sometimes those births are like kind of a lot for medical staff, you know, where you come in and your baby's like crowning.
Yeah.
But I feel like those births are the type that they really do talk about for a really long time. And they're like, look at this. Like, I love. I they call, a lot of the times here in Utah, anyway, they call them stop and drops, meaning like you
Oh.
show up at 10 centimeters, you just stopped in and dropped your baby, you know, like had a
Yeah.
baby. And I feel like in a lot of ways, it shows people that like labor can happen at, you know, at home. And then you come and it can so beautifully happen without getting an IV, getting a heart trace, like setting up fluids, doing this, having a cervical, you know, there's just so much that doesn't need to happen. And I kind of love when medical staff can see that birth can just happen like that. Like it really, really can if we just leave it be.
Yeah, and you know that's exactly another point of how I felt before, because because I had gestational diabetes and because I had a previous C-section, they did make it sound like I needed to be hooked up to every machine and I could never give birth at home. And you know,
Yeah.
I just felt so like almost like a I don't know, like a robot sort of just connected to everything, and that's how it had to be. But yeah, this time I wasn't even in a hospital gown. Like just it was just so organic how it happened. So I think
Yeah.
that was exactly what I wanted to experience, but I think it was a good experience for the nurses as well to see
I
that
see.
it was okay. I was
Yeah.
fine without the IV and the other stuff. So
Yeah. I love that. So you had listed some tips, and one of them was doing pelvic floor exercises on the ball, which we kind of talked about. And I love the ball so much. I'm going to link, if you guys are interested in a ball, I'm going to link a ball in the show notes because they're actually really inexpensive and can do a lot of really good things. So what other tips do you have for someone preparing for a VBAC?
The number one tip, which I've heard constantly here, is about being educated and just understanding what your options are. I think, unfortunately, I think that most providers are not going to make it easy to have a C-section just because of, or to have a VBAC just because of the risks, you know, that are associated. And they of course may have your own, they may have you in mind, you know, your well-being in mind, but there
Right.
is also just a lot of like hospital policy and protocol that they need to follow. So
Yeah.
they may not make it easy, but if you understand what the options are for on your side, what the research says, then I think it opens the door for dialogue. And when you open that conversation, I think you will find the doctors will probably give you more options than what they may initially have suggested. So I always spent time talking with the doctors about like, so what if this happens, or how about this, and how about that? And I felt like that did kind of wiggle in some room for me to not do things just following the protocol. So that's really
Yeah.
important. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting how if you show up showing that you're educated, there's this different sense of, I don't want to say respect, but I do want to say respect
Yeah.
because I feel like these providers are like, oh, they get it. They
Yes.
understand. I can't just say whatever. This needs to be an educated discussion, you know, and it should always be like that. But I also think a lot of the times providers, they don't have time to like really sit down and talk about the evidence, or their evidence is flawed because of maybe personal experience. And so when you come in and you're like, hey, what about this? And they're like, oh, she knows stuff. You know, it
Exactly.
just, it really, I do feel like it maybe gives you some wiggle room. It gives, I feel like the providers respect us a little bit more because they realize how important this is, that we are educating ourselves, we're learning, we know the options, and we're not just going to be like, oh, okay, cool, you know. So I love that. I love that tip. That, and so finding the supportive provider, understanding, you know, in the beginning you had said the hospital policies may have trumped these providers' stance, right? And so I think not only just finding your supportive provider, but really understanding the hospital policy. And you can call and you can talk to the head nurse, you can talk to the board, if the directors of the
Yeah.
hospital, and you can say, hey, I need to know the hospital policies surrounding VBAC.
Yeah, and I believe it was on this podcast where someone mentioned that the best way to know how a provider feels about a VBAC is just to ask them very straight. So what do you think
Boom.
about VBACs? And
Yep.
their expression will say it all. You don't have to like have a preamble about it, like just ask directly, and I think
Yes.
that helps. So I definitely did that. It wasn't favorable in my case, but I definitely looking into the hospital C-section rates are really important too. Like, how often do
Yes.
they have C-sections? How often do they have VBACs? If they have that information available, that's also really helpful. And in my
We're
case, I found out too late that there wasn't,
Oh.
relative, it wasn't the highest, but it was pretty high. But and also from this podcast, I learned that it's never too late to switch providers if you want to. But I didn't take that route. I just, I stuck with who I was with, but I guess was trying to just be adamant with what I wanted to do, as
Yeah,
much as possible.
absolutely. Did you, or I should say, do you have any tips on how to possibly find the hospital's cesarean rate? I mean, it used to be out there, cesareanrates.com or org, actually, maybe it was org. Cesarean rates. It used to be out there, and you could look up your hospital, you could look up your state, you could look up your provider even, and that's kind of gone down a little bit and changed a little bit. But did you, or do you have any advice that if someone's wanting to know their hospital cesarean rate?
So in my case, I just searched the hospital name and the cesarean rate. And so this was a pretty big hospital. This was in Florida. It was a hospital with a very big network. So that information was readily available on their website.
Awesome.
You would need to dig around, but it was on the website. So if you are dealing with a big hospital with, they have many departments and so on, they may have that information on the website with an easily like a Google search. You can also talk to people at the hospital as well. If you really can't find it online, I think that information is quantified normally. They might not
Yes.
quantify how many VBACs they have, but definitely the C-section rate, I think, is something that is information that they're following and tracking.
Yeah. And I always feel like it's fair to ask your provider, what's your cesarean rate? And a lot of the
Right,
times they'll say,
right.
oh, I don't know. No, they know. They know. So that's something that they need to be able to give you. It's okay for you to ask that, what percentage of your delivery is endonecesarean.
Right. Yeah, I think
Yeah.
being direct is really the easiest way, just to know clearly where they stand.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to really quickly talk just slightly about gestational diabetes. There's a lot when it comes to gestational diabetes, and we know, just like you, had experience that most providers suggest an induction. They just do, right? And it's, according to the American Pregnancy Association, gestational diabetes occurs in 2 to 5% of pregnancies, which is decent. Right. And for those who are higher risk in their pregnancy, it may be even higher, up to like 9%. But a lot of them are controlled like yours were, like through diet or even through insulin and things like an exercise. So a lot of people are controlling them. And evidence-based birth, which I want to make sure that this is linked in our show notes and our blog. So if you want to go read more about gestational diabetes, or if you had gestational diabetes with your last pregnancy and you know that you may have it again, definitely go check it out. But they talked about that there's actually very little data in how often people are actually induced because of the diagnosis of gestational diabetes. But in one of the like retrospective studies that they found, out of like 330,000 births from 2001 to 2007, they saw, I think it was like, okay, let's see. It says the people in the study came from six health insurance plans, many different hospitals and regions, and represented a large and diverse population. Health insurance plans' data were linked to birth certificate data in order to improve accuracy compared to using birth certificates alone, because that also gives us more. Going down a little bit further, they said overall 30% of labors were induced. And when they looked at the reasons for induction, 59% of labors were induced for an accepted medical reason and 41% were considered to be elective. Those are pretty
Oh,
big numbers to me,
yeah. Yes.
right?
Yeah, those are huge.
Yeah, those are really big numbers. And so, it goes on, it talks about, does gestational diabetes always mean induction? What's the evidence for randomized controlled trials? They go way into it because Rebecca Decker's amazing and their team is incredible. And then we'll also have our blog linked because I believe that this is a really important topic to know more about, especially if you've had it. So you can make the right decision. And kind of how you said, you're like, I was in a controlled state. Everything was controlled through my diet. And I could have likely gone further, but you just didn't. And you weren't really encouraged to go further, or
Yeah.
it was like, let's induce. And so
Yeah,
I
it
think,
literally was just like that. It was
yeah,
just, there
like,
was no conversation about it.
yeah, no conversation about it. And I think that's where we're going wrong a lot in the medical system is a lot of the times there's no conversation. And even though we have the power to start that conversation, sometimes it's really difficult when we're like being told your provider thinks this, or your baby's in danger, or you're in danger if you don't do these things. It's like, okay, I'll do those things. But we need to have these conversations. And I think that, again, having the education and knowing the evidence behind it and the risks and the benefits and all of those things, it will help you have that conversation if and when the time is needed. So thank you so much for chatting with us today and sharing your
Yes.
stories and giving us advice and leading it into more conversation for gestational diabetes. I think it's something that it is happening. A lot of people are getting it. And there's things that we can do even before pregnancy, like really increasing our protein and things. But then sometimes it just happens and
Yeah.
we just it just happens.
I will say, just to be clear, the second pregnancy, I did not have gestational diabetes.
Okay.
And that was also something, because that was my biggest concern. The 2 points I mentioned was about the conditions where I couldn't have gestational diabetes and I needed to deliver before 40 weeks. So,
Yeah.
but this goes along with the education. I really did my best to improve my diet, even pre-pregnancy, to, avoid that diagnosis. And it was actually a miracle that my blood test came back really well. Like I almost thought this was like the wrong test because it wasn't elevated at all. And so I
Yeah.
was really, really thankful that through some dietary changes and, lifestyle changes, I didn't have gestational diabetes at all. And then the second point about giving birth before 40 weeks, it was a spontaneous labor at 38 weeks, which also was just, it was so supernatural. I really thank God, like it just everything just happened really perfectly. And
Yeah.
yeah, that was really a blessing.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for everything. You are amazing
Oh, thank you.
and we just love you.
Thank you so much. I had a great time sharing the story, and I hope it encourages other women as well.
It will for sure.
Great.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.